Hey everybody, good morning. It's Bobby from BobbyOnFire.com, and this morning I have my regular friend here, John, who's been very much a part of these, and my friend Ann, who is visiting as well.
Hello. Good morning, Bobby.
Hello.
That was John and Ann. Today's story is there's some themes running through this story, and the stories themselves are kind of, I think, interesting, but there's a theme running through it that I think can have a lesson. But let's start with the story. I started telling a couple of these stories because people asked me years ago how I got promoted on wildland fires, how I got promoted into positions of responsibility and supervision at such an early age. And it's kind of funny because I couldn't say, well, you know, you take this class and then you go to this situation, you find your way up and, you know, you get promoted. And it wasn't that way at all. It was happenstance. But let me describe some of those instances of how I got put in positions of supervision at an early point of my career, way before I should have been, before I was really qualified. There was a fire around 1980, 79 or 80, and it was in a little mountain range here outside of the city where I'm at right now, and it was a desert fire, and it was a year that we had a lot of rain in the desert, and meaning lots of green grass grew and the brush grew, and then it dries out. And now it's June, and it's 110, and there's all this dead fuel out on the hillsides. Well, we had a lot of fires that year, lightning, and then the fire start. And there was a gentleman from outside the state who worked for the Forest Service who had come in to help with the local agency. And he was kind of a higher up in the Forest Service. And he was in charge of the fire. And I was kind of his assistant. I had no qualifications other than being a firefighter, but I knew the area. And so, okay, Bobby, you go and you help. And there was about 30 firefighters. And we were putting fire line in, fighting fire. We had a little 50-gallon tank with a little pump on the back of an old military surplus Jeep. This was the extent of our technical firefighting equipment. It was like a 1940s Jeep with a 50-gallon pump on the back. That and 30 firefighters with shovels and axes and such. That was our firefighting force. And we're making progress though. We're flanking the fire, and we've been out there since maybe midnight, and now it's about noon the next day, and we're running out of drinking water. And the fella who was in charge of the fire, this bigwig, in my mind, he was a bigwig coming from out of state, taking over the fire. He said, we're going to have to turn around. We can't get supported, you know, logistically. We don't have any water, so drinking water, so we're going to have to go back. And I said, well, I think I know where there might be some water up here. And he said, there's no water up here. This is the desert. It's June. It hasn't rained in 4 months. There's no water up here. And I said, well, I kind of know the area. And I knew the area from high school, from all through grammar school, high school, hiking up there, and spent lots and lots of time up there. Well, I knew of a rock house and a rocked up water trough. And John here was there as well when we were kids. And there was an old pipe that led up the canyon that, you know, that started, you know, when you were down in the low country, there was a water trough and a pipe going up into the canyon. So you knew at some point, 100 years ago, there was probably a little farm, little ranch, and there was a spring somewhere feeding that trough. Now, that was on the other side of the mountain range from where I was, but where this fire was. But we were two-thirds of the way up the mountain, And I was pretty sure that spring had to have been on the other side of that ridge. John's laughing at me right now. But
this idea is crazy.
Well, we knew that there was water at some point up there. So I tell the guy who was in charge of the fire, back in those days we called him a fire boss. I tell the fire boss, let me take some guys with canteens and we'll hike over the top of the mountain and I think I can find the spring where there's going to be water. He says, there's no water up here. It's, like I said, it's 110 degrees. It's June. It hasn't rained in months. No, there's no water. Don't. And so he was just really dismissing me. And I kind of kept at it. I'd wait a little bit and I'd say, you know, I think I can find water up here. No, no, no. And finally, I think he just, which is, there's a history I have in my career of just bugging people until they finally say, fine, just go do it. So I go and take, I think there was might have been three or four of us, and we were all carrying the big gallon canteens, and they were probably, well, they're a gallon each, so we each had make 4 gallons or 4 empty canteens with us. So we hike over the mountain. I get to the ridge top where there's a little saddle, and sure enough, I see, remember there was a petroglyphs up there and rock art, you know, Indians had made drawings up there, and who knows what they meant, but they were saying something from that saddle. You could see miles and miles around. So I climbed down, and I was leading this group of firefighters, and by total chance, some might say, or good judgment on my part, we find the spring. We find this pipe sticking out of the rocks, and cold, fresh water pouring out of the rocks and into this little stream bed. Now, the stream is completely dry, and it's so dry, you know, the water just pouring right in and going into the sand and the rocks. So there's no stream down below. There is no sign of this down below. It's just water in this little bitty canyon in this desert mountain. So I came back with, you know, 20 gallons or more of cold, fresh water. And this guy could not believe it, the fire boss. He could not believe that I found water in the desert. And so I was like, he just kept going on and on. I can't believe you found water in the desert. Oh, my God. And I was like, well, I was pretty sure I knew there was going to be water up there, you know. And so anyway, so we finally put the fire out. It took us a couple more days, and the fire went over the top of the mountain back down to the, you know, back to the other side. It was a pretty good-sized fire for this area, not very far back then from the municipalities. Now it's in the municipalities. But anyway, so that was a good fire. And the next summer, found myself on another fire, and I didn't really have any real qualifications. I mean, I had been working as a crew boss, you know, in charge of, you know, 10, 15, 20 people maybe, but no, nothing else. Well, I was on this fire, and the fire boss was not a real strong leader. He was not a real strong decision maker. And I had gone out and scouted out the fire where, and there were people working on one side of the fire. And I came back and said, you know, if we just do this and we put these lines in here and you give me a couple engines, we can probably, you know, come up with a plan and get the fire out on this other side. And he just was hemming and hawing. He couldn't make a decision what to do. Well, the same fire boss from the fire where I found the water, he shows up again to take over the fire and to, you know, just to take over and relieve the other person who was there as the fire boss. So he's hearing me, you know, pushing for, let's take some action over here. We've got some extra engines. We've got some crews. Let's go and take action on this flank of the fire. And he had heard my whole pleading for taking action. Let's go. Let's do this. And so he tells the fire boss, the new incoming fire boss, tells the one who'd been there, says, I'm taking over the fire. And he says, so, you know, you're relieved. You know, it was not like it was a bad thing. It was just that they sent a more qualified person to be the fire boss. So he had heard my whole spiel, and he comes up to me and he says, "Are you a sector boss?" Now, this is old terminology, folks. This is not, we don't use this term anymore, sector boss, but back in those days, we did. And he says, "Are you a qualified sector boss?" I said, "No." You know, I'm thinking to myself, last year I was a nothing who found water, you know. Now you're asking me if I'm a sector boss. No, I'm not a sector boss. He said, "Okay, well, you're going to be the sector boss. And here's, I want you to take these resources, these fire engines, these hand crews, and I want you to go, you're in charge of this sector, and now you're the sector boss for this side of the fire." And we had a very successful time of it. We put that flank out, and, in pretty short order, we put the fire out. It took another day or so, but it was a good deal. And he was really happy with me, and I was happy because I got to do what I knew needed to be done. So the next year, I am sent by my agency to a large forest fire that is burning on a national forest and then partly off the national forest, and I'm sent as a resource advisor. Now, for folks who don't know what a resource advisor is, that's someone who's supposed to advise the people running the fire on any natural resource issues, any kinds of things that might have to do with say the land is leased for something, or maybe there's some Indian ruins or whatever, you know, because you're supposed to have more knowledge of that area and can advise the team that's managing that fire. So they sent me as a resource advisor. Well, I have no idea what to do. I mean, I was a firefighter. I had natural resource degrees, but, you know, my interest was really in fighting fire. So I get to this fire, and who's the incident commander? Now we've gone to incident commanders. We've switched over from the old terminology, and now the new terminology. Instead of fire boss is incident commander, and that's what we still use today. So the incident commander of this team that had come in, large fire, was the man who was in charge on the last fire where he made me a sector boss. On the fire before where I found the water, now he's the incident commander, and he says, what are you doing here? And I was like, I'm a resource advisor. And he said, do you want to be a resource advisor? And I said, no, I don't know what a resource advisor is supposed to do. He says, are you a division boss? So anyway, division boss, that was the old terminology. It changed to division supervisor now. But back then he said, are you qualified division boss? And I looked at him and I said, you just made me a sector boss last summer, and the sector boss is below a division. And I said, no, I'm just sector. You made me a sector last year. And, you know, because he was like the bigwig and he said I was a sector boss, then it's all of a sudden, okay, I'm a sector boss. That's how it was in those days. You know, now you have to take classes. You have to have multiple classes and multiple training assignments. He said, you're not a division. No, I said, I'm not a division. Well, okay, you're going to be a division trainee, and I'm going to send you up to whatever division Quebec, up on the mountain. It was a big fire, and I had to go find this division and tell the division supervisor that was already there that I was his trainee. And so I took a helicopter, because it would have taken me days to get up there. So helicopters are flying around, and I go to helibase. Hey, I need to get to division Quebec. Okay, well, we got a helicopter, gonna stop, get on, and we'll drop you off on, they're delivering supplies, you know. So, okay, so I get on the helicopter, and we fly to one helispot, and we fly to another helispot, and then, okay, this is yours, you know, get off here. And so I show up and find my division boss and tell him what I'm there as, you know. And he says, oh, okay, great. And so, coincidentally, on that division was a hotshot crew that I had been a member of, let's see, not even 10 years before. So 10 years before, I was on a hotshot crew that I wasn't even allowed to, I mean, I was like the second to the last person on the line. That's the lowest position you can be on the crew, you know,
Because the last person has more responsibility to make sure they get done well.
Exactly. So the second to the last person is the person who they're keeping an eye on who's not going to screw something up. So the last time I saw most of these people on the crew was I was the second to the last person on the crew. And now they say, hey, what are you, Scopa, what are you doing up here? I said, I'm the division boss trainee. What? You're the trainee? Anyway, that's a whole other story. But but after that fire, then my agency said, well, you know, now you're a division boss. And all of a sudden I was. Now, so then the question is, so then years go by and people will say, you know, oh, you got your division early, you know, because then division boss became division supervisor. And so if you listen to a lot of these stories that talk about being a division supervisor, so people will say, how'd you get to be a division supervisor so early? And I'll start to laugh and I'll say, because I found water in a desert. See, all you got to do is find water in a desert and you can get promoted. But that's a cutesy answer, usually good for a laugh or someone to scratch their head and wonder what the hell you're talking about. But I think the right answer is, how'd you get promoted so quick? I think if I look back on it, it's because you provided some needed input. You showed some confidence that you knew what could be done to help improve the situation. And you kind of stuck with it a little bit, you know, because lots of people have good ideas and they get told no, or they get pushed to the side, and nothing happens, nothing changes. So I think part of the answer for me on this story is that I just kept pushing. I just kept saying, no, I know we can find water. I know that there's got to be water up here. Have I seen it? No. Did I know exactly where it was in relationship to where I was? No. You know, I could talk myself out of it now, you know, saying, oh, I shouldn't have gone looking for it. But John thinks I probably shouldn't have gone looking for it.
This is a crazy idea.
And the idea at the next fire, that next year, you know, hey, I know we can do this, you know. And we could do it, and we did do it. I knew we could find water, and we did find water. And those folks that are in charge, who are ahead above you, who they've got their marching orders, they're trying to get stuff done, and you're trying to help them. You're trying to help them meet their goal and the expectations of their supervisors. I think my answer to how did I get promoted quickly. Even though I like to say I found water in a desert, I think the real answer is that I was assertive in a calm manner, in a supportive manner. I wasn't, and you know, a lot of times women can be called names if they try to be assertive. I've experienced all of that as well. But I think you gotta have some confidence. And I bring up confidence because there was recently an article in the Harvard Business Review, which I really enjoy reading, on leadership. And it talks about how when there's a void in an organization or a void in a group, the person who often becomes the leader is one who oftentimes doesn't have great leadership skills, but they seem really confident, and they might actually be terrible leaders, but they have this confidence that may or may not have any relationship to their abilities to lead the group. So I think being able to portray and communicate confidence, I think is important, and I think that's what probably led to other other successes in my career. I just thought of another story that I'll have to tell one of these days. But it all has to do with how you portray yourself and how you come across. Now, when I've told some of these stories to younger firefighters, the question was asked, how do you know when to push and when to not push? Because people can get in trouble pushing too much, and it can backfire on you. And, you know, as most of these stories tell, the story within the story, oftentimes it's all about people. So I've been telling stories about fires, but if you listen to many of these stories, you know it's all about people. It's the funny things people do. It's the funny way people react. It's all about human relationship. So what I have told some of the young firefighters that have asked me, well, when do you know when to push and when do you know when to pull back? It's like you've got to read the audience. You've got to read who it is you're talking to, your supervisor. You know, you've got to have those people skills and develop that emotional intelligence to know when to push and when to pull back. And otherwise, I don't know what the right answer to that question is, how do you know when to push and when not to push? But I think confidence is a big part of it. And even if you're not 100% confident inside, you need to be able to communicate that confidence to those folks around you. So that's kind of the essence of this story. I appreciate everyone's listening. If you've looked at the website, you've noticed that we have about 20,000 downloads since July of the stories. So that was a surprise to me when I started realizing what the numbers really were.
And maybe people have ideas on like their tips.
Oh,
or when
yeah.
to know, leave a comment.
Oh, that would be great. Because if you leave a comment.
When it's too far, when's the.
Yeah, or some of your experiences. Maybe you pushed and you got slapped down. Or maybe you thought you should have pushed and you didn't. Yeah, it would be great if you share some of that. I appreciate that suggestion, John. So I think we'll wrap that up for today. I hope that was enjoyable enough that you'll come back to the next week's episode. And in the meantime, everybody, please be safe and enjoy the holidays. Thanks.